seems not to have asked many questions and wasted no time. He got up that very night that he had the vision and packed whatever he was going to pack really quick and took off right then in the dark.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Good morning. One of my favorite rock bands from my long ago teenage years was Three Dog Night. Any other Three Dog Night fans out there today? Several of us like Three Dog Night, people about my age. For those who didn't know, the name always struck me because it was drawn from an old idiom that had to do with a night so cold that you needed three dogs in bed with you to stay warm. It's where the name came from, and that always struck me. But they did a lot of songs that I really liked. They did Old Fashioned Love Song, which was just beautiful in terms of melody and harmony and well-crafted lyrics. They did One is the Loneliest Number, which I thought was a fairly profound depiction of the human condition driven by a dark, moody score. And then they did Never Been to Spain, which even as a teenager I realized meant almost nothing. The main virtue of the thing as a song is that most of the phrases rhymed. The lyrics inform us that the artist has never been to Spain or to England, but kind of likes the music from both places, meant to go once to Las Vegas, only got as far as needles. And for what it's worth, and though he does not have any personal recollection of the event, he was born in Oklahoma. And in case you are one of the two or three people on earth who are likely to confuse the two places, that's Oklahoma, not Arizona. So the song says. It ends with the only words that I thought I agreed with: what does it matter? Sounds like it ought to be profound. But in the end, only one meaningful piece of information is conveyed in the whole song, which is the birthplace of the artist, Oklahoma, because we are defined more by the places we have actually been than by all the places we have not. And particularly, I think it is true that we are defined by the places we have been and have left behind, and the reasons for which left them behind. With that thought in mind, let me move on to the Bible. God sent Mary and Joseph and Jesus to Egypt, and at the right time, he called them back out of Egypt. That whole thing, the sojourn in Egypt, it can seem incidental to us. Just one more thing that's in the Bible. I don't know, maybe because it happened, but does it have any significance? Well, they had to go somewhere to escape the persecution launched by Herod, and presuming that they were still in the neighborhood of Bethlehem, or at least of Jerusalem and Judea, they were on the south end of the country of Israel, much closer to Egypt than if they had been back up home in Galilee, when they would have been closer to the northern end and able to run up to Syria. So Egypt was closer. If they had gone west, they'd have had to get on a boat to get out of Herod's domain. Maybe there would have been some sense in their going east, following the wise men back to their home countries. Those men at least had wealth and influence and probably some interest in protecting Jesus. But that was not the message. God was specific. He didn't say, get up and run away because Herod wants to kill the boy. He said, get up and go to Egypt. To Joseph's credit, he seems not to have asked many questions and wasted no time. He got up that very night that he had the vision and packed whatever he was going to pack really quick and took off right then in the dark for Egypt. 200 miles walking by the shortest possible route just to get on the other side of the Red Sea again. And who knows how far after that. They stayed in Egypt for something like 3 years, maybe as many as five. There's some disagreement about that, until the death of Herod. And we'll see how many people are paying attention. Until the death of Herod in 4 BC. Some of you get the disconnect. That would be Herod, from whom they fled, died in what we would say was the fourth year before Christ was born. That seems to be something of a problem on the calendar. Take a minute to explain this. For a long time after the birth of Christ, the Western world continued to use what is called the Julian calendar. Made up at the behest of Julius Caesar just a little while before Christ was born. The Jews kept their own calendar wherever they went, but the rest of the Western world used the Julian calendar. After the passage of about 500 years, it suddenly seemed important to the church to be able to trace back to exactly the year that Christ was born. They knew it had been about 500 years, but they weren't sure exactly which year Christ was born in. And it was important to them to know, for one reason, there were lots of reasons, but the one reason that drove the most people was that there was this idea that Christ was going to return exactly 500 years after his ascension. And everybody wanted to know when that year was going to fall. So they wanted to trace it back and get it exactly right, so they could know when he was born, so they would know when he went back to heaven, so they could calculate when he was going to return and be ready. Oh, we never change. Can't we just be ready and not worry so much about counting the years? But that was in there. So a monk named Dionysius Exiguus, Dionysius the Humble, was given the task of making the reckoning. Now, Dionysius was very knowledgeable of history, so he had that going for him. In retrospect, it would have been good to team him up with somebody who was actually good at math, too, because he made some rather simple and obvious mathematical errors, and those were compounded by something that he did not realize at the time, that the Roman astrologers under Julius Caesar had reckoned the year at about 11 minutes too long. And that 11 minutes piled up year after year, creating what is known as drift in the Julian calendar. But you can't fix what you don't know, and you add the Julian drift to Dionysius's mathematical errors, and the date was officially set several years wrong. By the passage of another 1,000 years, the drift in the Julian calendar had piled up until the dates of the seasons and holidays were obviously, seriously off kilter with the actual equinox and solstice. The first day of winter no longer fell on the solstice, according to the calendar, and everything was messed up because that 11 minutes just kept piling up every year, year after year. In 1582, Pope Gregory commissioned the calendar that we still use, the Gregorian calendar. They shortened the year by 10 minutes, 18 seconds, arriving at a year that lasts for 365 days, 5 hours, 49 minutes, and 12 seconds. And then they did the leap year thing. But even though a lot of people realized by now that Dionysius Exiguus had been wrong, they maintained the year of Christ's birth that he arrived at, and the reason they maintained it is predictable, because to have changed it would have upset a lot of traditions, and then, as now, the church and tradition. There are some things you just don't fool with. So I throw all that in for free so that you know that Herod died in what we would call 4 BC, but it's okay because Jesus was probably born in what we would call 7 or 8 BC, And that's okay. When Herod died, Joseph and Mary brought Jesus back to Israel. To go back and quote the nearly meaningless song by Three Dog Night, what does it matter? Only in this case, I contend that it does matter. The members of the band may never have gone to Spain, but Jesus did go to Egypt, and for important reasons. Matthew said he went to Egypt as a matter of prophecy so that the words from Hosea 11:1 could be fulfilled. Out of Egypt I have called my son. Now if you go back and you read the 11th chapter of Hosea, and I put up there a few more verses, and there's more than that, but you can read that much for context. If you read that chapter, it is plain that in the original context, the verse is talking about the people of Israel, the nation, and the way that God called them up out of Egypt through the ministry of Moses, and that the son that Hosea had in mind is Jacob, and at that, not Jacob the man, but Jacob the people who were called for the new name that God gave Jacob, Israel. A lot of commentators then give Matthew grief over this. William Barclay, for one, says, Matthew is prepared to use as a prophecy about Jesus any text at all which can be made verbally to fit, even though originally it had nothing to do with Jesus and never was meant to have anything to do with him. Barclay goes on to say that Matthew did this because he was desperate to convince the Jews that Jesus was the Son of God, and he thought prophecy and fulfillment of prophecy was the way to do it. So we just have to read the Gospel of Matthew, understanding his desperation and knowing that these prophecies really had nothing to do with Jesus and were not prophecies at all, and wink and nod at Matthew's campaign to convert the Jews. I say that William Barclay missed something profound about the prophetic bent of the Old Testament. Last week, it was my goal, at least, to help you understand the way that the ministries of the Old Testament prophets, priests, and kings foreshadowed the ministry of Jesus Christ, who was prophet, priest, and king, who is prophet, priest, and king. And I read the whole business of Egypt in the same vein. The captivity in Egypt and the deliverance from it was one of the biggest and most formative experiences in all the history of the nation of Israel. And it was more than just a deliverance from slavery. It was a deliverance from the worship of Egypt's false gods. It was a preparation for having to resist the false gods that they would encounter when they returned to the land promised to their ancestor Abraham. And it was many other things, this being called out of Egypt. I have maintained already that we are in part defined by the places we leave behind and the reason for which we left them. The Israelites may have forgotten things, but they never forgot that they left Egypt. And most of the time, most generations never forgot the reasons why they were called out of that place on that side of the screen. I guess on your side, this side for you, I'm looking at that one back there. And across that triangle-shaped wedge of wilderness and up into the land promised to Abraham, they were given a cycle of holiday celebrations, Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacle, specifically to help them remember why they were called out of Egypt. And the celebrations kept the memory alive. They were not just freed from slavery. Surely it occurs to us that God could have freed them from slavery and left them in Egypt. Why, he could have reversed their fortunes again so that they were favored in Egypt the way they had been favored in the days of Joseph. He could have put them in charge of Egypt. That is, God has no trouble with things like that. He could have done all that, but that was never the place they were intended to be. God didn't call the Israelites to Egypt. He called them to Israel. And their long sojourn in Egypt was exactly the shape of their failure to recognize and willingly participate in the big plan that God had for them. They originally fled to Egypt to escape a temporary calamity, a famine. Now, I know Seth knows because Seth answered this in the 8 o'clock service, so let somebody else answer. A famine that lasted how long? 7 years. Very good. They went to Egypt to escape a famine that lasted 7 years. Now, let's just take a wild guess. When the famine was over 7 years, what should they have done? They should have gone home, back to the land that had been promised to their ancestor Abraham, the land to which their destiny and God's plan was tied, the land from which it was said that they would bless all the peoples of the whole earth. They should have gone back there, only they didn't. Egypt was the wrong place. And it became the very definition of everything that was wrong with Israel. Egypt became an issue partly because the Israelites valued comfort and prosperity above their place in God's plan. So God took away the comfort and the prosperity. He took it good and away until they felt like they were more than ready to get out of Egypt. And even then, every time things got hard in the wilderness, there arose a hue and cry among an element of the people, "Hey, let's go back to Egypt." And that whole generation that so connected themselves to Egypt had to perish in the wilderness before the Israelites were purified enough to return to the land promised to Abraham. Egypt was a problem because, push come to shove, the Israelites had not yet overcome the idea of local gods. Yahweh was that strange God of that strange place to which our strange ancestor Abraham migrated. But we're not there. We're in Egypt, and there are other gods in Egypt, and we've got to deal with the gods in Egypt because we're in the middle of their dominion. God had to show the Israelites that he was bigger than any locality and could not be contained by any border, and he could reach into the heart of Egypt, the supposed territory of these other gods, and do whatever he wanted. And nobody could stop him because he is not the God of this place or that place. He is the God of all places. He is the Lord of heaven and earth. And did God accomplish that demonstration for the Israelites? Well, he showed them in spades. Egypt was in every way the name of their failure. So God did not just free them from slavery in Egypt. He freed them from Egypt. And everything that it meant, he called them out from a place they never should have stayed, but where they did stay until it was too late to leave because another king rose and the favored guest became the oppressed slaves. He called them out of Egypt physically and spiritually. He called them not just from one geographic location to another, but out of bitter pointlessness and into his purposes, which he would see fulfilled. He called them out of Egypt to bring about the promise that all the world's peoples would be blessed by the seed of Abraham, and Egypt was not the place from which that blessing would arise. And then Christ came into the world, the fulfillment of the promise to Abraham. And in his own person, he relived this vitally formative experience of the nation of Israel. He fled to Egypt from a temporary calamity, the persecution launched by Herod. But when the calamity ended, Jesus returned to the land of the promise and sat about the purposes of God, and he knew it would be hard, but he came and he did it anyway, and he did it without ever being confused or bamboozled by either the charms or the dangers of Egypt, where Israel failed. Christ succeeded. Well, of course he did. The Israelites came out of Egypt only after centuries of dismal failure. Christ fulfilled the purposes of God without fail from the beginning. The Israelites came out of Egypt still needing considerable purification. Christ left Egypt prepared to purify the world. The Israelites came out of Egypt needing to establish a way to deal with their sins. Christ came out of Egypt ready to deal with sins. The decidedly imperfect people of Israel were still privileged to be the children of Abraham through whom Christ would come into the world. And when he came into the world, he relived their experience, only he succeeded in every way in which they failed and triumphed in every area with which they struggled. The exodus of the Israelites from Egypt was another picture of the ministry of the Christ to come. And so Jesus went to Egypt, and God called his son out of Egypt. And commentators like Barclay, notwithstanding, the picture matters. It mattered to the Jews at the time, as the Spirit so brilliantly led the Apostle Matthew to understand and proclaim. But it also matters to we who are not and never have been and never will be Jews. Fall back one last time to Three Dog Night. Well, I've never been to Egypt. No. Wait. I was born there. Because I too was born in sin and bondage and failure and distance from the plan of God. Egypt, it's the whole wide fallen world. And we all live there. But God calls his children out. And he calls them to Christ. And that makes all the difference. If you are still living in Egypt, that is, sin and bondage and failure and distance from the purposes of God, if you are still living in Egypt, let me assure you of this, God calls his child out. And if you have never come out yet, let me tell you that Christmas time, as we consider this whole question of Christ's journey to Egypt and what it means, if you have never yet come out, what a great time to answer the call and to leave Egypt behind forever.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.